Does our work matter? Does our work matter to God? Scott Powell is a writer with the Discovery Institute. He says we should celebrate, not denigrate, American prosperity and the whole work ethic that goes behind it, and encourage that work ethic among our people. In fact, recently, Scott Powell wrote an article about the importance of labor. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Points, and Scott Powell, who is also the author of Rediscovering America. The website for that is rediscoveringamerica.net. That's a wonderful book about America's holidays. It's really about America's Christian heritage, and it tells the story by focusing on the holidays. And one of those holidays, of course, is Labor Day. And Scott Powell now joins us on the program. Scott, great to have you on the program. Thank you.
Always good to be with you, Jerry, and your audience.
Okay. How about a generalized statement? Is work important, and why is it that some in our society almost seem to denigrate hard work or prosperity?
Well, you know, work is very important. And in fact, when we think about how we're created in the image and likeness of God. We know that God is the master creator, so he wants us to be creative as well. And there's no better place for people's creativity to flourish than the marketplace. Now, not everyone can be a creative entrepreneur. Some people have to, you know, are called to do more predictable, labor where they're working for an hourly wage, and they might find their creativity in work outside of the workplace. But certainly many people are blessed to be able to be creative in their workplace, and that's where we find meaning and dignity in our life, and that's a gift from God.
All right, so let me ask you this. We have about 330 million Americans, and there are about 50 million Americans who essentially receive food stamps. So the money that they receive in order to buy food and everything is coming from the labor of others. Is that part of the design that the founders of America intended?
No, I don't think you can find anything in the founders' writings or debates that talked about the role of government being a welfare state. So the answer to that is no, the founders did not envision that. Certainly the church was quite active in early days in helping people in need, and it still is, although perhaps in the earlier days, there was less poverty back in colonial times than there is today. And so then you might ask yourself, well, is there a relationship between poverty and welfare? Does welfare perpetuate poverty? And I would argue, yes, it does.
Interesting. Okay, carry that further. And by the way, let me give you a quick anecdote. I talked to a lady recently who had just come back from California. She was shocked as she drove from San Francisco all the way down to Los Angeles on that beautiful highway by the sea and so forth. She said, everywhere you go, there's all these tents of the homeless. It's not just a pocket here and a pocket there. It's virtually the whole corridor.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, we are in unusual times. And unfortunately, some people are not able to really be responsible, take responsibility for their lives. And, they're living on handouts and welfare. And, of course, welfare really doesn't give you enough to live really, really well. But if you're camping out, I suppose it does.
Well, it's very sad because it gives incentives for those who, in some cases don't want to work. But there are some who want to work. They just, it's just difficult for them to get into the whole system and so forth. You know how it is. It's hard to get a job.
That can be, yes. And when you are employed, you can more easily get a job when you already have a job.
That's true.
And it's some of it is attitude, self-confidence, and so forth. Others, it's when you're employed and you've got certain skills that other companies want, then it's easy to, change your job and perhaps move up.
America has become so prosperous, or at least, it's amazing. In fact, let me quote your article. Colonial America certainly benefited from the fact that early settlers were a self selecting people willing to leave the familiarity of their European homes and cross a dangerous ocean. Now, let me just say something real fast. A lot of that, the motivation there was so that they could worship Jesus Christ and the purity of the gospel as they understood it. So in other words, religious freedom was absolutely a prime moving fact for many of these people, and they were industrious in part because of their Christian faith.
Yes. Jerry, you couldn't be more right about that. Both the Plymouth, the pilgrims who settled in Plymouth in 1620, and the Puritans who came into Boston starting around 1630, both of those folks were motivated for religious reasons, religious freedom. And they both envisioned going to the New World just as the Israelites left slavery in Egypt and were going to the Promised Land. Both these groups articulated a vision that resonated right with the ancient Israelites leaving slavery for the Promised Land. They viewed the New World as the Promised Land.
All right, let me continue with your article. Because they were tough, willing to sacrifice and take risk, these settlers were predisposed to forego immediate gratification and to work hard. I'll stop right there and let you comment on that further. And by the way, decided to not immediately be gratified, they often would reinvest the money that they earned from their business, and then they thus prospered further. And sometimes that's been called the Puritan work ethic.
Yes, it has. Yeah. And there's a whole discussion about why Protestants tended to be more entrepreneurial and more economically successful than Catholics. Of course, Catholics didn't come to America in the earliest days, and they largely went to Maryland, so they didn't go just everywhere. But it was that uncertainty of salvation, at least this is what Max Weber's theory is in the Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism. He argues that when the Reformation took place, it was very positive in many ways, but it did create some uncertainty about the state of salvation. There was some uncertainty about the church is no longer there. It isn't just church attendance and making confessional to the priest. You know, my relationship's directly with God, and there's some uncertainty there. So I better work hard, because I know that that will please God. So the Protestant work ethic was a pretty powerful phenomena, and it fueled much of our economic growth through the 1800s. You know, America was growing faster than any other country in the world. It was like a stock car going from zero to 60 in 3 seconds. America went from poverty, in the 18th century to incredible prosperity in 150 years. Just remarkable.
You know, what's interesting, too, is one of the Puritan leaders in 1702, Cotton Mather, he said this. He said, "Religion begat prosperity, and the daughter hath consumed the mother." In other words, what he was saying is that, you know, because of God, we have prospered, and now because of our prosperity, we have forgotten God.
That's right. That is so true. That happened with the Puritans. You know, the Puritans were very successful. They were very religious, but as they became more and more successful in Boston, in the Boston area, in the New England colony, they fell away from God a little bit more. They began to think, well, gee, by my efforts, I've got this prosperity, rather than looking at their prosperity as a gift from God.
Yeah, and
Pilgrims in the Pilgrims down in Plymouth, they were ultimately sort of assimilated in the New England colony, but they were a separate colony for many, many years, and they didn't have that. They were not really money motivated. They were truly wanting to live according to their biblical beliefs. That was the most important thing.
I was just going to add, speaking of biblical beliefs, Deuteronomy chapter 6 and Deuteronomy chapter 10, they both mention that same idea. Don't forget God, when you prosper in the promised land. Why does capitalism and free enterprise, well, it's more capitalism. Why does capitalism have a bad name? Why is it that many young people today think socialism is the better way? And maybe even, and some people will even couch it in religious terms and say, well, socialism is clearly what Jesus would prefer rather than capitalism.
Well, there are many kinds of socialism, but the socialism that Karl Marx envisioned would be a society in which there would be no private property. And we know that that is unbiblical. The Bible is very clear about property, that property is an important part of life, that's a right that people have. It's a God-given right to own property. And on another occasion, we can talk about how property really protects us and gives us freedom. It was John Locke that said that without private property, there's no freedom. And I would argue that that's true. But the reason that, the reason for confusion is that we've had a wholesale assault on our beliefs, our Christian beliefs, and our beliefs in institutions such as the free market, which is really based on a Christian perspective, a godly perspective, that we're free agents, we're free to create, we are free to develop products for which that people want, and the system of capitalism is really not a system based on greed. It's a system based on understanding what people want and desire, and then serving those needs. Creating, producing goods and services that serve other people. So in some ways, capitalism, the free market capitalism, is a servant-oriented system. The Marxism gave it a bad name and really emphasized the fact that capitalists were, just driven by greed. Nothing could really be further from the truth. And that is borne out in the biographies of some of the most successful people, like Rockefeller, Vanderbilt, Carnegie. You find that they were more motivated by what they were doing than they were motivated to get wealthy. The wealth just came as a result of being successful at business. And that's true for most successful business people today also.
Okay, look at today where you have a lot of college students. They come out with a degree that's virtually worthless, okay? Like women's studies or, queer phenomenon or, whatever it is. Okay, so they come out, they're heavily in debt. Many of them are living in their parents' basements, and they're writing all kinds of different missives against, the evils of capitalism and the glories of Marxism and stuff. And then sometimes they'll go out on the streets and they'll protest, against America and so forth. So it's really a crazy time we live in, railing against the American capitalist system. We have about a minute left.
Well, we certainly saw this go on in the 1960s with the Cultural Revolution. But this time around, it's far, it's much different, and it's more advanced, it's more subtle, and I believe we have foreign adversaries that are promoting cultural Marxism within America, and many people don't even realize that they're being manipulated to turn against the very system that would give them happiness and prosperity. It's a shame that people don't understand the basics of how an economy works and how to feel good about yourself. I don't know anybody who's on welfare that feels really great about themselves. But people that are independent and productive and giving to society, invariably they feel more gratitude and they feel more satisfied about their lives. So the answer is really clear. Get engaged in living life. Think about how you can serve other people. Find a job that you are, where you can engage your talents and feel good about what you're doing. And if you're not happy there, it's not the end of the world. That's the beauty of a free system where you can change jobs very easily. In the communist world, you can't just change jobs easily. You're stuck for life sometimes in a job you don't like.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Discovery.org for more information and also rediscoveringamerica.net. Scott Powell, thanks so much. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.